guys. Welcome back to the One Broke Actress podcast. This is episode 6. What? This means this season, season 5, is already halfway done. If you're a new listener, that is some info for you. We only do 12 episodes at a time, so this season is halfway done. However, if you're considering unsubscribing at the end of the season, I just have to tell you that we are already planning things for between quote-unquote seasons, and some of it might involve help from you guys. So make sure you stay tuned. Make sure you're following on at One Broke Actress on Instagram, and I'll keep you posted on what we're thinking. Still kind of figuring some things out, but I hope you guys are having such a busy pilot season you haven't even noticed that we're halfway through the podcast. Really interesting. The Hollywood Top 5 did a great podcast this week about how pilot season orders are down at their lowest ever, and I believe it was 55. So if you're sitting at home wondering where all your auditions are, do not fret. They're going to people with a fuck ton of credits because there's not that many pilots going on. Also, I can't recommend enough, if you haven't been reading pilots, and I know you guys are asking me where to find them, find friends, find people around you. Somebody has the pilots, right? Like, you probably won't be able to read all 55 of them or whatever, but if you can read a good handful, you can get a good perspective on maybe you're not going out because there's not roles for you precisely. Do you know what I mean? I think it gives you a little perspective and also calms your brain a little, and that's just really my goal, to help you guys with that idea. With that, however, we are going to get into today's podcast with an actress who I hope is having a bomb-ass pilot season. In fact, she has an episode of a TV show coming out this week. I met Ashley Platts many moons ago at the Sunset Marquee. We were just simple hostesses together. Ashley has been a consistent person in my life. Whether I go a couple years without seeing her, or I text her every other day, or she sends me memes on Instagram, she is a light, I gotta tell you guys. And she's not holding anything back in this episode. She's really, really open about her journey as an actress, as well as her journey with her own personal sexuality. She is now an out member of the LGBT community, and it's really interesting how she got to that point, and it had to do with auditions, which is crazy. So I think you're going to really like her story. She also shares with us how she survives in LA between jobs and how she keeps her momentum going and what shifts she made in her career to really turn up the volume on the things that were important to her. I respect the shit out of Ashley, and I think by the end of this episode, you're also going to be big fans. And speaking of being her fan, she announces in this episode that she is on this week's episode of The Bold Type. And if you're anything like me, you're obsessed with that show. So listen to this podcast and then make sure you tune in on Thursday and see her episode, because I can't freaking wait. Okay, without further ado, please enjoy Ashley Platts.
It's also crazy weird because I trained you.
I know.
To be a hostess.
And a restaurant.
At a restaurant.
Which, by the way, is it still called The Restaurant?
It has a real name now. I don't remember what it is, but it actually has a real name instead of just restaurant.
We met at the restaurant at the Sunset Marquee, and people would say, which restaurant?
The restaurant.
The only restaurant there. So you were the first person to kind of guide me a little bit in LA. I think you were probably what I would consider my first real actor friend. Which Aww. Is really, I know. I know your life story to a degree. From Jersey.
Should I say who I am?
Yeah. Well, that'll be in the intro, but okay, if you want to give it a go now.
I realized I didn't do that. I'm Ashley Platts. I'm an actor. I'm from New Jersey.
How do you introduce yourself to a room of people? Like when they're like, quickly introduce yourself.
I say, my name's Ashley Platts. I usually say I'm East Coast. Huh. And then I say actor, writer, producer. And I teach yoga for fun.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So when you came here from New Jersey, tell people a little bit about your backstory, just so they have a completed circle.
Yeah. So I was just a really rambunctious kid and would do a lot of impressions of performers that I saw on TV, specifically Celine Dion and Whitney Houston. I would not call myself a singer, but I used to do impressions of them. And then it started to like leak into like movies. I would just do impressions of actors being goofy. And my parents thought like, oh boy, what are we going to do with this kid? But they never thought to like enroll me in classes or anything. They just thought I was just like spunky. And so often when we would watch movies as kids, like I specifically remember watching E.T. and hearing my parents say, "Oh, that's Barrymore's kid," about Drew. And I was like, oh, so the way to be an actor is if you have actor parents, or you have to be like born. It was like a royalty thing, right?
You learned that lesson really quickly.
I just assumed, right? So I also assumed that there was no way I could possibly ever, because I lived in New Jersey. So like, unless I was born in Hollywood, like it just wasn't going to happen in my head. So it wasn't until I saw the movie Clerks that I realized someone from New Jersey could make movies, because Kevin Smith is from New Jersey. So shout out Kevin Smith. Thanks for the inspo.
That was the one that did it for you.
That was the one that did it for me. I loved that movie. It was like a cult classic and still is. And for someone from New Jersey, it was like everything, because it was filmed in New Jersey. It was this tiny little movie, and it made me feel like if this guy can do it, I can totally do it. So I think it was high school. I had an open elective, and around this time was when I was sort of figuring out maybe I wasn't a straight girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in my guidance counselor's office, and she was like, "Well, the only two things that fit into your schedule are metal shop and theater." And I was like, "Well, obviously I'm going to metal shop on the off chance there's another woman there who might be like me." And she was like, "I don't know that I want to give this much energy to that poor metal shop teacher who's like an introverted man. Let's put you in theater." And I was like, "Theater? Ugh." And little did I know, like, oh, the queer culture in theater. Thank God.
I like that you went to metal shop to find potentially.
Yeah, I would have been like a weird loner who worked in a garage for a living. I don't know. I don't know what life would have been. But I ended up in the theater class, and my teacher saw something in me and was constantly putting me in competitions that I didn't want to be in. And because I was a track and field kid, that was like my life. I was going to be an athlete. That was the end of it. And she was always signing me up for things and telling me like a week before, "You have a week to do a monologue for this state competition," or "You have a week to do whatever." And I would half-ass it and win. And I was like, okay, there's something here. If I'm putting in like 50% energy and I'm winning trophies, imagine what I could do if I put in 100%. So I decided to go to college for theater against everyone's better judgment and suggestions.
Truly always is everyone.
That theater degree has paid off so much, you guys. So, so much.
Says both actresses in this room. Oh, all three of us, in fact. Our producer, Cecilia, also in my program in college.
I had the best money you should have never spent in your life. I basically I paid to find a community.
I say the same thing. I say I paid to grow up.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up a bit. I don't think I grew up a lot. But I definitely, I had to live by myself and not rely on adults. I had to like become the adult I relied on. But yeah, that was where I found my community of people. And I went from being like a questioning bisexual, thinking there might be one more of me in my high school, to like everyone thought I was the only straight kid. And I was like, I'm not. I'm just scared.
Right.
So but- yeah, I didn't have a lot of straight friends in college. And I think I went to Pace University in Manhattan, and that was a really small theater program at the time. My class doubled the size of the theater department. So we were fighting for shit constantly. And if that wasn't the greatest lesson for me on what it's like to be an actor, I don't know what was, but we couldn't get anything done unless we fought tooth and nail for it.
Wow. So why didn't you stay in New York?
Oh my God. Great question. I always wanted to move to LA, but I never had a reason other than, cause I was like, why? My family's here. I can stay here. I knew New York really well. My attitude is definitely better suited for New York, but, I offend people constantly in LA. But I took a summer course at the New York Film Academy, just to do it. Cause you weren't allowed to double major with a BFA mm-hmm. at my school. So I ended up being in a bunch of these little experimental short films. And one of them got into the Palm Springs Short Fest in, 2007.
Okay.
And the filmmaker was going to go by himself. And I was like, I'm totally going with you. And he was like, well, you're not even like, I wasn't even the lead actress. Like the lead, it was ironically, maybe not ironically, the story was about a woman who might be bisexual. And I did not play her.
Oh,
I played her lesbian first date. But I was definitely the main girl in real life. Just being like, oh, this is so weird. I got cast as the other part. Whatever. So it's this three-person short film. It gets into the Palm Springs Short Fest, which is a big, really well-known, acclaimed festival. And I was just desperate to go with him and like learn. So we end up being screened in this queer block, and it still wasn't clicking with me. Like I still wasn't out. I was out mm-hmm. to maybe like one person. And everyone I met there was like, what are you doing in New York? And I was like, commercials and off Broadway, off Broadway theater. And I don't know. That's just where I live. Like at a certain point, you don't really think about it. You're like, it's just where I live. Like, yeah. This is why I'm there. I'm there because I'm there.
Yeah.
And they were like, you need to move to LA. You're a film actress. And I was like, I am? Okay. So I took a bunch of strangers' unsolicited advice and packed up my life and broke off my relationships and moved.
Also, it's really cool you took a bunch of people's in Palm Springs advice.
Like what? You know what I mean? Like they were filmmakers mostly from LA, but like I wasn't in LA. I was in Palm Springs and I got all these numbers and these people were like, call me when you get here. And I called all of them and I never saw any of them. Like honestly, except for like maybe two of them, but like years later, and I'm friends with one of them now, but it was like, you know, that was 12 years ago.
Wild. Okay. So you get to LA, you have New York credits
mm-hmm, that mean nothing.
Yeah. And a degree.
Mm-hmm. That also means nothing.
Thanks for taking my joke. So you have that. What do you do? Because this is not that, if 12 years feels like a long time, it's not that long ago.
It's really not. What did I do? I got a job in Beverly Hills as a hostess. And I got into improv classes.
Where at?
UCB.
Okay.
Mainly because I was just bored. Like to be honest, I started submitting a lot on Actors Access right away.
Mm-hmm.
And
you were the first person to teach me about Actors Access.
Oh my God.
Isn't that so funny?
Teach every newbie about Actors Access.
What would you teach someone about Actors Access? People who are listening right now might not be in LA yet.
Oh yes. If you are moving to LA, you cannot exist here as an actor without Actors Access. You just can't. I had a friend from New York move here, sleep on my couch forever, and really wanted to be an actor. And like he was, I mean, maybe he still is super talented. Could not get over the like his own bullshit to put himself on Actors Access.
What?
4 years later, I was like, yo, so how's it going? And he was like, I don't know. I just need some advice. And we sat down because I'm like all about mentorship. Like I have three actors I'm mentoring right now. One doesn't even live in LA.
Wow.
And I was like, yeah, dude, like what's going on? Why aren't you auditioning? And he's like, well, I hate my footage. And I was like, oh, okay, well, just throw it up on Actors Access and just go. And he was like, oh, I haven't opened an Actors Access account. I was like, you've been here 4 years. What are you doing? He was just in class, which is great. Like, great being class.
Yeah.
But like,
that's like one piece of the puzzle.
It's not as important.
Who told you about Actors Access when you moved here?
My roommate. Okay. I moved in with an actor who had like come straight from high school. And I was like, how do you get auditions? And she was like, LA Casting and Actors Access. And I think at the time it was Mandy.com was like, I don't know if that's still a thing. So don't quote me on that. But that was like an old thing. Yeah. I think it's now it's more for like crew.
Okay.
People to get jobs, non-union maybe. But at the time you could also do it as an actor. Weird. Yeah. Super weird. And also my first acting class was like really pushing that.
Okay. Good for them.
I know.
That's great.
But I just started doing that. I did a play actually right around the corner from here at the Underground Theater.
Oh, really?
It was my first play in LA.
Uh-huh. I feel like everyone does at least one play when they move here.
Oh, yeah. Well, because I was like, this is easy for me. Like, I'm a theater kid. This is like no problem. And I learned during that play right away that New York actors are very different than LA actors.
How so?
Because I showed up prepared and on time every day. And I was alone. And the director used to constantly make an example of me because he was also from New York. He was like, do you see this girl? And I hated it. I was like, oh, please don't single me out. Like, I just moved here. I have no friends and you're not helping me. Like, I don't care that they're late. I just need friends.
Nobody wants to go get a drink with you.
Nobody wanted to hang out with me. I was like, it's not my fault that I'm showing up on time prepared. That's like all you have to do.
It's
pretty simple.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So you're submitting, you're doing all this stuff, you're working, like, what was your day-to-day life when you first got here? Because I think the first 3 to 4 years is, people say if you can survive 1 year, I think if you can survive 2 to 3.
Okay, so the brutal honest truth is I spent most of the first year going to the beach.
Yeah.
And being not a New Yorker. And okay. Just, like, trying to find what my life was like without my family around me, building new relationships. Still sort of battling with sexuality and being 21, 22. Like, what is that? And being so far away from my comfort zone.
Did you live by the beach?
No.
Oh my God, and you still went to, where'd
oh,
you
yeah,
live?
Oh yeah, because I didn't know that people in LA don't go to the beach unless you live by the
I
beach.
I actually haven't been to the beach
know
in
that
like
yet.
A year.
Yeah. I lived in West Hollywood.
And you went to the beach.
And I drove to Malibu all the time.
I'm so impressed.
Why? What? I would never do that now. No. Like, never. I'd be like, what? No, it needs to be planned 3 days in advance.
I know.
Like,
you live in the valley, and I haven't seen you in forever.
I know. It's like the different area. It's so far away, but it's not. Mm-mm, it took me 10 minutes to get here. But I'm like, ugh, Hollywood.
I know.
I'm in Studio City. And for non-LA people, it's 10 minutes.
Yeah.
On a Saturday.
So you are just like figuring out your life, right? Like putting it together.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that's an important thing, though, because people kind of... I did this. I came to LA and I was like, I super hope everyone can hear the people that just started construction around us. I think we
never
might be
stops.
Okay. We'll see.
Never
welcome
stops.
To LA. Because I jumped in and I was like, I'm gonna find a place to live. I'm gonna start auditioning. I had like a 5-year plan.
Oh yeah.
It's on my website. I'll link it to this podcast. But
I had no plan. I just planned to keep going. That was literally my plan, was just like do all the things and just keep going.
Well,
I didn't know what that meant.
It's working.
Yes, it's working really well now because I know what those things mean. Instead of just like, I don't know, just keep doing stuff.
How do you find people who support your work creatively that create? I'm gonna take that back.
Take it back.
How do you find people? How did you find like reps and things who would help you support your creativity? Because I feel like you're doing so much right now. Like you just did a play. Did it just finish?
I just finished a play.
That's right.
It was Ryder Strong from Boy Meets World and a 90s Babies wrote his first play, and it was really, really intense and thought provoking and so well done. And he's just really talented, and he's going to go far with this type of work for him for sure. But yeah, I just finished that play. It was so fun.
But you have like reps who are like supportive of your, like the work you're doing now.
Yes.
Which is, I think the first reps people get are kind of easy to talk about. Cause it's like, well, I like figured out how to get an agent. And also 12 years ago, different than now, like
totally.
Getting one. So what has been your journey with representation? Because that's a battle that sometimes we lean on a little too much.
Yes.
But
I am of the mindset that there's a reason that my reps get a percentage and not the whole. They get a small amount of the money that I make because they should be doing, like, so your rep gets 10%.
Mm-hmm.
Some people's get 15. Depending on your market, you get different percentages. But my agent gets 10% of my income from acting jobs because he's doing 10% of the work, which means I need to be doing the 90%. So what is that? That's getting enough sleep. That's making sure my talent is on par, going to classes if I need to, you know, staying on top of like what's going on in the industry so that I know how to market myself a little better, mm-hmm. keeping up with better headshots, getting my footage out there, staying in shape, like all of the things. that's my job. Yep. So, because he's pushing buttons on a computer and calling, hopefully, for me. Yeah. You know what I mean? And putting in that energy. But he's also doing that for X number of other people.
Yeah.
So I'm getting a small percentage of that.
Yeah.
If you can hear the construction noises, just think about it as the construction on your own career. The work that we're putting in. And if you can't, you think we're crazy and you're like, what are we talking about?
I know. They might. We'll see how this goes on the recording end of it. Sorry, guys. So let's get into a little bit then you like figuring out who you are in this business. And because I think your coming out story is fucking fascinating. Because like I had no idea. And then when I found out, I was like, that tracks. Like, cool. Like, I don't know. I don't know. Let's talk about it. Because I actually haven't had anyone talk about this kind of thing on the podcast before. Mm-hmm. So, and it also, I feel like, informed your career.
Yes.
Because once you kind of took hold of who you were, you became who you are. Mm-hmm. Is that a little meta? Mm.
You know, I think about people like Kristen Stewart, who was in the closet for the biggest role that we know her for and constantly being seen as miserable on the red carpets all the time. Like she had Twilight and was just like, everyone was like, why is that girl so miserable all the time? And then lo and behold, she comes out and like, she's lighter. She's not picking jobs just to pick jobs. She's doing things she wants to do. And now she's Charlie's Angels is like, this movie's going to be massive. Who gets to say they were Charlie's Angel? Like that thing is huge. And she's clearly so in her own skin now. And for me, watching her, I think she's stronger than she's ever been acting wise because there's an authenticity to her that she's no longer denying or hiding.
Yeah.
And similarly for me, I didn't really have like, I don't know if I would call it a coming out story, more of like, not like a gender reveal, but like, hey, BT Dubs, this is happening.
You should have had a cake.
I should have had a cake. A rainbow. It would cut in. It would be rainbow on the inside.
Like funfetti.
Yeah, I should have had a funfetti cake. Ugh, we'll opportunity get wasted. My parents were both like liberal leaning Republicans in farm town, New Jersey. So surrounded by hardcore Republicans. And they never raised me to be judgmental of other people. And there was never really a talk about sexuality in my house ever. So the hardest person that I had to deal with about being identifying as bisexual or pansexual was really me. Because I just didn't know what it was. And I didn't know that it was a thing. I just thought I was like, clearly weird or that I was just like going through something that everyone goes through. And I had this weird thought where like, oh, I'll probably just pick at some point like what I am.
This was like an ongoing thought.
Yeah. This is like all always. High school. And I had one of my closest friends, of course I had a crush on her. We skipped school one day to go see theater. You guys, this is who I was.
Oh my God.
I can't believe that just reminded me. We skipped school to go to a theater to see a play and we ran into her mom and her mom was with another woman, like romantically. And I was like, Oh, that's an option for adults too. Like it just like never,
you didn't
clicked
see
in
it
my
then.
Brain. No, it wasn't in media yet. Especially the way it is now. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I was like, oh, maybe I love her daughter. Maybe I should tell her. But luckily I didn't because that would not have been a good choice. But it was sort of like always kind of ruminating. And when I went to college, I would bring a guy home, bring a girl home, and just didn't think about it. Mm-hmm. And my parents never said anything, never made me feel weird or uncomfortable about it. They just loved me and supported me.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So I never really came out to my family until another member of my family was talking about coming out. And then I was like, oh, well, I've never done that. Maybe I should do that. And I mean, I did this like recently, you guys. Mm-hmm. I was like, I should probably do that. So I called my brother. I was like, hey, I just wanted to let you know that I'm pansexual, bisexual, and this is what that means. And he was like, yeah. And I was like, well, do you have any questions about it? He's like, am I supposed to? I was like, I don't know how this goes. Not really. Like, and he was like, anyway, so are you coming home for Christmas? Like, it just completely changed the topic. And I was like, okay, maybe that's just him because we're close in age. So I call my mom. And I'm like, hey, so I just want to let you know I'm bisexual, pansexual. And she goes, Ashley, you were bringing girls home all the time. What did you think? She thought like I didn't know until that moment. So she was like, I don't know how you didn't know that about yourself.
Like everyone
I was like,
knew.
No, what no, I, what? No, I'm okay.
Was there a reason it felt like this was the time to have that discussion?
I think it was more about supporting my other family member. I find that for me as a person, I'm less likely to do things for myself, but I'll do things for other people first.
Yeah.
The strife of being a woman. Uh-huh. Yay. And then shortly after that, I decided to let my reps in on that.
Mm-hmm.
For no reason other than like, well, I wasn't auditioning for queer parts, but ironically, the movie that moved me to LA was a queer role.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So I was like, what? This is silly. Like I have so much footage from indies where I'm clearly seen as who I am. And, but I wasn't going out for any like queer TV roles. So I was like, can we like start to keep a radar for this? And they were like, oh, well, there's this Batwoman thing. Do you want to self-tape for that? And I was like, yes. Do you want, what? What kind of question is this? And my manager at the time was like, well, they're not letting people do that yet, but I'll stay on top of it. So I knew they had an offer out. We finally get the sides and the self-tape. And I did all of this research to find out how Supergirl was cast, how The Flash was cast, Arrow. And the through line for Greg Berlanti's projects is that it almost always the first person that David Rappaport sees, he's the casting director, mm-hmm. the first person he sees is the one they end up going with. But it'll take a month or 2 months. They'll see that first person. They'll go through the lists and lists and lists, and they compare them all to that first person.
Wow.
And they end up going back. Granted, that first person has turned out to be epic each time. But that's the weird like story for Grant, The Flash, and Melissa for Supergirl. So I was like, I have to get my tape in first, obviously, right?
Yeah.
So I worked my ass off and sent in the tape. And maybe like a week later, my Instagram started blowing up. Like, you have a new 1,000 followers today. And I was like, what? These yoga posts are out of control. I am killing it with these yoga posts. And I was dating this woman at the time, and she was like, I don't think it's your yoga posts. And I was like, why not? She's like, because everybody new is commenting on your photos with bats, like the bat emoji.
Yeah.
And I was like, is that a sex thing? Like, I don't know. I was like,
kids these days.
I'm like, elder millennial. I was like, I don't know. What does this mean? And she was like, I think it's about the Batwoman audition. I was like, well, there's no way she's the woman I was dating was an athlete. And I was like, there's no way they would know about that. Like, that goes privately to casting. And she goes, well, they seem to know about it. And I was like, well, how would that happen? Like, panic. And it turns out maybe 8 or 10 of these auditions got leaked. So they were only seeing queer women for these parts.
Okay.
So in my head, if anyone saw these auditions and saw that I was in them, everyone would know that I was queer. And I was like, shit.
Not on your terms.
Not on my terms. But weirdly very on brand for who I am.
Yeah.
To like see me as this person.
That's what I said when you said it out loud. I was like, that tracks.
It tracks, right? It's so like the story, it's kind of perfect. And the woman I was seeing at the time was like, well, you really have two options. You can either just go into a closet that you've never been in, or you can just pretend that everyone should have known and they're stupid. And I was like, well, obviously that sounds way better. So I just embraced it. And, you know, I had a day where I cried. I embraced it and I moved forward. And, yeah, so the Batwoman thing kind of went viral. My audition was picked out of the others. And the internet decided I needed to be her, which I was like, there's an offer out to someone much bigger than me, guys. If she passes, they're going to hold auditions. Like that doesn't just go to me, but you know, the internet doesn't know how acting works.
No.
And then lo and behold, it's upwards of like 80,000 views, which is more views than any audition I've ever done has ever had.
I mean, what? I have so many questions.
I know.
How does an audition get leaked? This has to be an internal thing, right?
I mean,
or like, would your reps do something like that?
No. Because it was directly through, what is it, Cast-It?
Yeah.
So, and there were a few of them. So
I was going to say, is we transfer having some backing
issues? There was a
night
of drinking and trying to figure out how this happened. And the best we came up with was like temporary system error or like angry intern at casting office. Like, wait, who knows?
But like, what a lovely surprise. Here's what I think is really cool about this, on other than the obvious. That you are surprised you're not Batwoman.
Yes, by the way.
But,
spoiler alert.
Sorry to let
Ruby
you
Rose start. Got it, you guys. She's amazing.
but that not getting an audition that you worked really hard for has had epic, amazing consequences.
Yes.
And I don't think we hear stories like that. Usually a story like this would end in, and then she booked it.
Right.
And it doesn't.
Yeah.
So
most of the time it doesn't.
But we don't hear those as
often. Or and then she quit and moved home.
And like, then they called her and were like, "Come." Oh wait, that's the Emma Stone movie. Mm-hmm. What did this do to you as a person in your career? Because at this point you've been in LA. What was this, a year or two ago? 11 years?
I guess it was like almost a year and a half, 2 years ago.
Because we've come from Jersey to New York to school to the Palm Springs Film Festival to figuring your life out in LA. Things are going relatively smoothly in your career, did you feel like, up until this point? What were your thoughts before this audition?
Okay, so up until that point, I became the indie film darling because that's what I was told. That's basically what brought me to Palm Springs, mm-hmm. and what I knew I was good at. Like, I have a very intense look about me. This is my real voice. Like, I can cry when needed. So, like, I am an indie filmmaker's, like, dramatic, tortured female's dream. Like, that's my casting. Or, like, a woman who's struggling against authority. Like, that's my niche. You know what I mean? So, indie world ate me up, and I led it, which means I made $125 a day. Mm-hmm. Maximum.
Oh, which is the
four years. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
and you supported this with your yoga career, mm-hmm. which is
bartending, Sunset Marquee. And then yoga. Yeah. It's a nice flexible job, you guys.
She's really good at it too.
Thank you. But yeah, so I sat down with another friend of mine, Audrey Moore, mm-hmm. who you know of. And she was like, so do you feel like you want to be an indie queen for the rest of your life? And I was like, no, I would like to pay bills. And she's like, okay, so I challenge you to start saying no to indie jobs. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? And she was like, no more unpaid web series, no more, you know, maybe getting paid later short films. She's like, just step up the game. You're good enough. And so I started saying no. And for a year, I focused on making myself action footage, mm-hmm. and saying no to anything that wasn't co-star TV or lead in feature.
And your reps were okay with this?
They were, because cool. I had just gotten new reps when that happened. Okay. So they were just like, okay, let's roll with it.
And how did you know you wanted to niche down to that? Because I think that's sometimes a lot of the struggle for people, and something I deal with all the time is figuring out, okay, if I'm going to take it like 6 months to a year to just focus on X, Y, and Z, how did you figure out what those things needed to be?
I think most importantly was I prioritized my value. I have so many years in this industry. I have a talent level that is beyond my credits, and I don't always value that over getting another credit or getting another job. Mm-hmm. And being able to say, oh, I have something coming out, even if it's like a web series that I'm never going to get paid for. Like sometimes that feels like progress, but it isn't always. For a certain level of actor, it absolutely is progress. And where I'm at, for me to go do a non-paid web series right now would not feel like progress. But it didn't always seem that way. Yeah. It felt like, oh, it's another thing I can put on the resume. It's something else to do, something else to talk about. When in reality, it's like, yeah, but it's not moving me forward. It's just moving me.
Was that conversation with Audrey what shifted that for you to realize that it was no longer helpful?
Yes. It also happened on the heels of like me going off to shoot two indie projects. So like I literally left her house where we recorded and went to Florida to do an indie film that fell to pieces. The director was a misogynist. He thought I would just like fall in love with him while I was there. And I ended up leaving after 2 days of being on set.
What?
It was a nightmare.
Okay. So the universe was like, and back to LA you go.
So I called her and I was like, so you know that conversation we just had about my value? I'm quitting a job. And she was like, yay, what's happening? Like, you got the lesson, but I wish you didn't get the lesson like this. Yeah. You know what I mean? So then I went on and did this short film called American Muscle after that. And I was super nervous because I was like, here's another indie short film project. However, the project was so on brand for me as a person, as a female race car driver, who's like just trying to prove her worth. There's no romantic story. It's just about her stepping up her game. And at the time it felt like exactly what I was doing in my life.
Where did
just
you shoot this?
Stepping up my game. I shot it in Sacramento and in Oakland on an abandoned Air Force strip.
When did you audition for this?
Oh my God. Did you audition for this?
I think
so many people I know auditioned for this. It's really weird.
I don't go after a lot of race car drivers, but I think I...
It's called American Muscle. It's about a brother and a sister relationship. You totally auditioned for this.
Yeah, for sure. I'm so glad you booked it.
Yay!
I love this.
Hilarious. Oh, funny story about that job is I almost didn't go to that audition because it was at like 8 p.m.
I hate when that happens.
And I was like, I'm not going to this. I'm just not going. And my roommate was like, what? This is what you want to do? And I was like, oh yeah, fine. So I like reluctantly went, I reluctantly did it. And the irony was that the character was very attitude-y. Mm-hmm. So I was just already there in that place when I auditioned.
Going to an audition at night?
Well, yeah. I was just like, what is this? And then at the callbacks, the director made it seem like I already had the job. So I thought I was going in to do chemistry reads. Because they just paired me up with all the other dudes that were being cast. And it wasn't until I walked out and they brought in a new girl that I realized, oh my God, I've just treated this entire callback like I was booked and these people were here to see if they worked with me.
Wait, but there's something magical in that because then you were just doing, you were there for the other actor.
Completely.
Which everyone says is just one of the best parts of our job. You were just supporting the other person in the room.
Like, actually.
Wow.
But I didn't, like, but ignorantly, too.
Sometimes
the director
that
and I,
helps.
His name is Nick Martinez. We talk about this story all the time because he really wanted me for the part, but he had other people to appease and wanted to hold a call back traditionally. But so our communication, I understood that he really wanted me for the part. So I just thought I had it.
Amazing.
So it wasn't until, like, weeks later that I found out I legitimately booked it. And I was like, dude, I have to tell you. I thought I booked this like a month ago. And he was like, well, that was my fault. Like, I wasn't really clear about my communication. And I was like, yeah.
That's amazing, though. Okay, so you shoot this short.
Mm-hmm.
And then decide that you're not going to do any more indie projects.
Mm-hmm. Unless they're like very on brand for me. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of the TV that I book is fun TV, but it's not like really specifically Ashley Platt's character TV that's like gonna like that. It's stuff that I can do, but it's not the thing I'm the best at. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
I did the last thing I shot is getting much closer, but like it's slowly getting closer to those roles.
So when you decided to take this time to just get your footage, do that, this and that, when you focused down and got like your action footage, was that something you were like, this is a direct thing I need to get to the point where I'm going to go?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And then I haven't booked a single action job since then. No. However, way. I've booked like everything else. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's very weird. And then the footage that came out from this race car movie is epic. And I got to drive for 50% of on-screen driving is me actually driving.
Amazing.
So it's like no stunt people. So you can really see me driving. And that did the little festival circuit, which was a lot of fun. But it's like I put in all this time and energy to, I need footage of me being an action hero, showing that I can kick ass, showing that I can fight. Cause that's like sort of my whole thing is like, I shine the most when you put me in a storyline where I have like a moral issue with something and I'm fighting against. Mm-hmm. So like, if you were to look at like V for Vendetta, like that part would be super on point for me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But like things like that where I'm fighting against something because I'm naturally an activist. So that sort of sits really well in my wheelhouse. So a fighter or a warrior character is very adjacent to it. It's not exactly right, but it's adjacent to it. Mm-hmm. So getting to like make that footage, while I was making that footage, I booked Hawaii Five-O, which is a character who's dying of cancer.
Whoa.
In a way, a fighter.
Uh-huh.
But the scenes, it's just me crying because my husband's done something terrible.
Oh, so it's like back to indie stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like, and I was like, okay, but still first big TV credit.
Huge.
That was a guest star. So I'm like, okay, moving forward.
And they shoot it in Hawaii, don't they?
And they shoot it in Hawaii.
What
guys.
A magical, they cool
just fly
time.
They you to Hawaii.
That's awesome.
It's so awesome.
And do you think you could have kind of, I hate the term like boiled down, but like, kind of figuring out who you are and what you like is so much of it, the acting journey,
mm-hmm.
and boiling down what is missing from your reel, from your credits, from like making it all a complete package in a way, which
yes.
just so you know, guys, it's never going to be like complete. Like no. there's never a day we wake up and
because
you're like,
because you're
I
also going to change.
Yeah. I've never woken like, up and thought like, oh my God, I have everything.
No.
Someone come and get it. Like, no.
And you'll book the job that you think you want more than anything and you'll still feel that way.
I did a podcast with a director named Rawson Thurber, and he said, he was like, you know, it's funny because he's also a writer, and he's like, I'll be writing something. And I'm like, I get an idea and I'm like, oh man, that thing sounds so much better than the thing I'm doing right now.
It's always.
Always. So that's always going to be how it's going to be. But do you think that you could have been this clear about your path when you first came to LA?
No, definitely not. I also feel like the information that is out there now for actors is like a million times what we had when I first moved here. We had Backstage, which was an actual magazine. That was it. That's what we had. Sometimes you would end up in an acting class with a teacher who's a working actor, but most of the time you were with someone who had quit like a decade or two before, who wasn't in the same machine that you were in. And you're working on Tennessee Williams, but you're auditioning for Pizza Guy. And it's like, what?
Mm-hmm.
And you're making a frickin' meal at a Pizza Guy because you've been making a meal at a Tennessee Williams and you're wondering why you're not getting cast. Because nobody's teaching you how to do Pizza Guy.
Right.
You don't know how to walk in a room and just say, hey, here's your change. Have a good one. And walk out. You're like, hey, here is your change. You have a good one. And they're like, man, that guy.
I want to watch that commercial. So where are you at right now? What's going on right now? Like, what are you working on?
And
it doesn't have to be like a project, like with yourself.
Yeah, yeah. I don't sit still well in general.
Uh-huh.
And for a yogi, that's ironic, but it's probably why I do it. Right now, I wanted to get footage of myself doing a period piece. Mm-hmm. So last year I wrote a Western and produced it, and we shot it this summer.
Yay. I'm so excited for you.
And it is in post right now, and we are already submitting it to festivals, which is crazy. And it is the thing that I've created that I'm the most proud of. And while that has been happening, my focus for my side of my career that I have control over is to constantly be building relationships, constantly stay on top of the relationships I already have. And I'm focusing more on, like, I just leveled up my manager.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And that happened because of a relationship.
How so?
One of my best friends was cast as a Marvel superhero 3 years ago. Cool. I was his date to the premiere. His manager was there. And we sat next to each other and became friends. And we stayed friends for 3 years. And when I was looking to level up, I reached out and it worked because we know each other. So as much as actors love to stay friends with only other actors because we get each other, you limit yourself so much if you are not building relationships with people who could potentially be a source of maybe not your rep, but someone who know who they may know someone who's looking for someone like you.
Yeah.
And I just feel like my whole thing is relationships. Like, it's very easy to be alone and lonely in this town. Very easy. So I really reach out and stay connected to people that have inspired me or I find interesting, and that has always benefited me on the back end. So leveling up the manager was super helpful. And now I'm focusing honestly on getting better at self-tapes.
Cool.
I feel confident in it because obviously Batwoman went viral. And listen, you guys, on the off chance that your audition gets leaked, make sure it's a good one. So I'm constantly working on self-tapes. I love just like grabbing some sides in my roommate and being like, let's just do this. Like,
I love
even
that.
If we hate it. Sometimes if I have an audition, she'll audition for it too. And just maybe she'll send it, maybe she won't, and vice versa. I'll just audition with her things just to do it. Because it's like with the play, I've had the luxury of putting in another like 3,000 hours into my toolkit because I've been working so much, acting so much. But if you're not doing a play and you're not constantly auditioning, which most of us aren't.
Yeah.
How are you getting practice?
Right. Okay, so I have two questions. Firstly, as you build relationships, you say you like to help maintain them.
Mm-hmm.
How do you go about doing that?
It starts with, I guess it depends on how the relationship started. So like relationships I met on set, I'm big on, I have this little acronym for myself, PPLP. I am professional, positive, and least problematic on set.
That's
PPLP.
Fantastic.
That is my mantra when I go onto set. I am professional. I am positive. I am the least problematic person on set. That alone will garner you great relationships because people are like, remember that person when we were having a shit moment and the lead was being a diva and they were just laughing it off and it was like easy. Do you know what I mean? Like making light of, there's always going to be problems on set. So starting with the way you are when you meet the person, especially if it's on set. And then I like to keep track of the people I bonded with the most and follow up. If they're directing the next thing, watch it. Tell them what you thought of it. It's really not that difficult, guys. Mm-hmm. We do this for our friends that we've known since we were kids. Like, oh, you got a raise. Congratulations. That must feel good. You reach out, you like congratulate them. But we're so afraid to do this with people in the industry. And we're like, oh, we're going to be a burden. It's like, oh, what a burden. Like, think about if you were in their position. And someone like I think about this all the time. I had someone come see the play who isn't acting anymore, but who was in the first play that I did around the corner from here.
Wow.
12 years ago, came to see the show and like pulled me aside afterwards and was like, you've grown so much. I'm so impressed with your work. I'm just really a fan. And I was like so moved because this person has known me for a decade. They're not even doing it anymore. They get nothing out of it. And even if they did, even if they were still doing it, like it just feels good to be acknowledged. And Everyone knows that, especially in a creative industry where everyone's going to judge you on every little possible thing they can. Like, oh, her teeth are weird. Like whatever the thing, like someone's going to rip it apart because of their own insecurity. So when you have something that is not that, why wouldn't you share that with that person?
Yeah, I love that.
Even if it doesn't go further than that.
I don't want to use the word like calculated, but like, do you kind of keep a steady like check in on people, or is it just
I do with my professional casting relationships.
Okay.
I do. If like, I'll
like
send,
an email type of thing.
I have a spreadsheet. Everyone I know who has either cast me or called me in a bunch. And I have a column next to their name with the last time they received something from me, whether it's an email or a postcard or a drop-in or the last time I ran into them. And I try to get that up to 6 per year for me.
Cool.
That doesn't feel like a lot. It takes, 7 times for someone to see your face and hear your name to get it stuck in their brain. So if you think about that, and these are relationships I've had, they know who I am at this point. You know what I mean? I've been doing this for a few years with this type of system, so they know who I am. So sometimes I'll see someone and they'll be like, "You can stop sending me postcards, Ashley." And I'll be like, "I know. I don't. I don't."
I love that. I love
it also makes me happy. I like to send cards. Well, I love to get cards.
Yes. So. And it's also a tangible thing you can do for your career. Mm-hmm. There's, like you said, the things that you can control, right?
Yeah.
So it's just another thing that you're in charge of that.
Totally.
That whole process. My second question is, as you do a self tape to like keep yourself practicing, one, are you in a class? And two, if you're not, are you just self-taping and like, is your friend giving you feedback? How do you utilize each other in that way? It's hard to find someone to self-tape with. Well.
Yes. I'm not in a class permanently. I take a lot of Jack Plotnick, who is a working actor in LA. He does pop-up classes sometimes twice a week, sometimes once a month. It kind of depends when he's not working, because that's who, for me, I want to learn from people who are in the shit with me. And he's awesome because he doesn't care about if it's good, or he cares if it's believable. So he's not trying to build disciples like some schools want you to like never really get the thing,
yeah,
but always be close so you keep coming back.
Just keep working.
Yeah. He's like, I hope you never come back. I hope you like learn this. And you, a lot of what he teaches is to like how to stop being a jerk to yourself while you're acting in your head, which I don't know if any of you feel that you might need that, but I did.
Yes. Keep talking.
Continue. And then the self-tape work at home, what I love to do is have, I'll have my roommate audition for the part I'm doing and I'll put her on tape first. And I'll direct her, because I can really clearly see what I need to change in someone else, but I can't always feel it in myself. So if I can be like, no, that thing you're doing doesn't make sense, but I would have totally done that. So I'm glad we had this moment. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, we can sort of problem solve in the moment. I love doing that. I love rehearsing with someone and then switching parts, because you also understand their character better, which informs how you could make stronger choices.
The listening gets so much better.
Oh my God. Listening is, I think, one of the most important skills for an actor, easily. We're watching people listen. It's fascinating to watch people listen.
Always.
Like the leads in movies. What is it? The movie with Clint Eastwood in the city where he's like the badass dude. Oh, this is... That Gran Torino, thank you. I was like, this is going south.
We'll get there.
When Clint got that script, he turned to the writer and said, I have too much dialogue. The lead listens. And I was like, what? And when you watch the great movies, it's completely true. You're watching through someone's lens who's reacting to their environment. They're taking in all the things. So like seeing their emotional journey happens when they're listening. It's crazy.
Ugh.
But who's taught this? I wasn't taught this in college. Be a good listener. I'm like, yeah, I'm paying attention. And they're like, no, in the scene. Like, oh.
Not for my next line? What?
Yeah.
Isn't that my cue?
My line. Next page, my line. You know, now it's like my line, opportunity to do something interesting. My line, opportunity to hear that moment and be affected. My line. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just work differently now.
Yeah. How did you learn that from what was the name again? Jack
Plotnick.
Jack.
No, that came to me. I did, shout out Jeremy Luke. I did a showcase for talent reps, God, maybe 6 years ago. This actor, Jeremy Luke, has these incredible workshops where he brings in all sorts of reps, mm-hmm, and you do a monologue or a scene. And I did a scene and I didn't have a lot of dialogue in the scene. I was mainly doing it because the other actor I was working with really needed reps. I was in a class that would give ultimatums. And my scene partner had been in the class for 5 years and had not had reps. And our teacher said, if you don't get a rep by like 4 months from then, you're out. you're kicked out of class. And I was like, I don't want that to happen to her. So I made it my mission, right? Me doing things for other people and not myself, to help her get reps. So I was like, I'll do a scene with you at the showcase. I don't care. Like, what are the chances that I had a manager, but I didn't have an agent. And I was like, you know, maybe I'd get an agent, but whatever. This is about you. So we picked a scene that was great for her, that showcased her, where I'm really just listening. And I got multiple meetings out of that.
No shit.
Because all of the agents were like, what are you doing on TV? When you're on TV, you're watching people listen, mainly, especially for co-stars and guest stars.
Yeah.
So they were like, we saw that you had the ability to pay attention and really be in the scene and listen. So that's how I got my first agent in LA, was from that showcase, because I listened. That's when I learned that lesson. I was like, holy shit. Okay.
Yeah, you don't have to do that much sometimes.
No, really don't.
Oh, I love that.
It's crazy.
Okay, I just want to keep going, but we're going to wrap it up. what do you wish for all my actors who are new? It's a heavy base of this podcast, or moving to LA, or maybe just getting started in Atlanta, blah, blah, blah. What do you wish you would have known when you first came out here?
That you need to treat your art like a business, or you will get lost. You need to treat it like any job that you have that you hopefully care for, that you're going to do something for it every day, whether that's like read a new play or find someone's career writer, director who you love to follow and constantly like look into their work, that you have to do 90% more than your reps are doing. And if you don't have reps, you have to do 100%. And you can't sit around waiting for the phone to ring. I mean, you can. Listen, there are people who do and they still work, but they're bored out of their minds.
Yeah, where's the fun?
And they're sad.
That's true.
You know, like you need to be the first advocate for yourself.
Thanks, Ashley.
Yeah.
Where do you want to direct people to? What do you want them to see, know, listen to?
Okay. You guys, I'm playing my first queer character on a TV show this year.
Yes!
Oh my God, I'm going to cry.
Oh my
so
God.
So excited.
Wait, what show?
There's a freeform show called The Bold Type.
I fucking love The Bold Type.
Are
you on The Bold Type?
It's so good.
It's my favorite show.
It's so good. You should totally be on that show.
I'm trying.
That's such great casting for you.
You're on The Bold Type?
It casts out of New York, Meredith Tucker. Shout out, Meredith. Thank you. I have a guest star on the new season. And I play a very New Jersey lesbian. Oh. You guys, it's so on brand.
My
it's so good.
God.
Accent and everything.
Do you know when that season starts?
I think the new season comes out the end of January.
Oh my God. I'm so
episode
excited.
5. Oh my God. I can't even wait. And this job came from a relationship, because the writer on my episode of Glow.
Yes. She was just on the new season of Glow. You probably might not recognize her.
You might not. Yeah. the writer who wrote the episode I was cast in for Glow, moved to The Bold Type, and we got to know each other personally, and she wrote this character for me.
And you got to do it, because we've talked about this before.
Yes.
People write roles for actors they know sometimes.
All the time.
And they don't end up getting the role.
This is the fourth time I've had a TV writer friend of mine say, I wrote a part for you. Two times I didn't even get to audition for the part that was written for me. Two times I did and didn't get it. Because celebrity child, because bigger name, because whatever. Yeah, this one was my first straight offer.
And it was a straight offer.
I know, I almost just peed myself, you guys.
I'm like going to cry. I'm so excited.
It's crazy.
Oh my God. Oh. Well, we'll be sharing that on our platform too when it comes out, because I'm going to watch it. I'm going to share everything about it. Dude, okay, anything else you want to pimp out? Because that's pretty
fucking
cool.
My Western is going to be out soon. And you guys, I mean, it's going to be done soon. I don't know what people can do for me other than if you want to go to Seed and Spark and find the page, which I can give you the link to, mm-hmm. and just follow it. When we you can keep following it. But if we get over 1,000 followers, we have like 527 or something right now. We get extra perks to help us with the film festival run. So that would be super dope.
Awesome. And follow her on social media and all that good
at
stuff.
At Ashley Platts.
It's thousands of people follow for the yoga pictures.
Yeah, there's every now and then you'll find one now, but I don't post them very much because I realized no one cares.
And that brings us to the end of today's podcast. Oh, Ashley, thank you so much. I fucking love you.
I love you.
Oh. All right, guys. I'll talk to you in just a bit. Thank you guys for tuning into this episode. Ashley, thank you for your time. You're a gem. I don't know where I would be in LA if I had met you when I first moved here. Guys, the people you meet when you first move to LA, you might lose track, but you might find them again, and it's kind of magical. This podcast is created and hosted by me, Sam Valentine, with production help from Laurel Canyon Creative, and our music is from the magical Maggie Szabo. All right, guys, that's the end of episode 6. Make sure you're following at One Broke Actress, and I will talk to you next week.